course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, Dave. We're joined, as always, by our other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Hey, I'm not doing too shabby. It is raining like hell down here in Florida, let me tell you what.
Yeah, it's a little gray here, but just a little showers on and off. Not too bad, but I think we got some stuff moving in, but...
Yeah, it's probably coming from us.
Yeah. I like the rain. I'm a fan of the rain. Bring it on. So,
No bueno. I don't mind the rain. I don't like thunderstorms. That's where it gets me.
Aww. Does it frighten you?
I have an irrational fear of tornadoes. Growing up in the Midwest, it didn't happen like super duper often, but I mean, there was always a tornado warning. Tornado watch.
Yeah. They drove that into you in the Midwest. It's like you're having drills at school and shit. It's like, you know, if you don't do this, it's going to kill you. And I'm like, And yes, I'm not undermining the severity of tornadoes, but I the whole time I lived in the Midwest for many, 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 many years, I never had one directly hit me.
Right.
Not saying you shouldn't take that stuff seriously, but you know. Anyway, on today's episode, we are going to be reviewing The First Omen, which is out in theaters now, a prequel to The Omen. But before we get there, we have lots to discuss and talk about. First off, thank you to our wives, our listeners, and our followers for all your support, your sharing, your comments, your feedback, everything you guys do. You make this a joy and make it worthwhile, and we couldn't do it without you. Mwah. What is it they say? Chef's kiss?
That's right.
I don't know. Maybe I'm too old to do that shit, but I just did it. So, anyway, Ike, before we get into all the other stuff, what did you watch this week?
All right. So, I watched a couple of things. First things first, I watched The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live.
Good stuff.
Yes, we waited for it all to come out and then just kind of binged it, and it was excellent. I really enjoyed it. In my opinion, it's some of the best Walking Dead that we've had in years. Now, to be fair, I have not watched the Daryl Dixon show, and I have not watched the entirety of, like, what is the other one? The World Beyond, I think it's called. So,
yeah, here's the thing. I've watched pretty much everything, the spinoffs, everything. Not to undermine any of it, but this is the best of the spinoffs so far. I like the other spinoffs. I like the Negan Maggie show. I like the Daryl Dixon show. Super excited for season two of the Daryl Dixon show when they have Carol in it. But this one, because this story, it's like this story probably would have taken place in Walking Dead, the main series, if it had continued on, you would think, right? Because it spun out of that. But yeah, excellent. I'm a huge fan of Rick Grimes and Michonne. So this series was great. It was so well done.
Yeah, it was excellent for sure. So if anybody's doubting watching it, don't just watch it. It's legitimately good. It had some pretty emotional parts too. I mean, and it's true that, you know, how they kind of pitched it is that this The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live is a love story, and it's just told in the apocalypse, and it really is. Go ahead.
no spoilers, but that season ending, just pulls at your heart.
It really does. It really does. But I was going to say, obviously, I love Andrew Lincoln. Guerrera, something like that. They're both fantastic, so couldn't beat it. But other than that, which I had a lot of good praise for, I watched two movies, one of which was Baghead.
I watched that too.
Yeah, I had a second to watch that one, which... I'll save that one for last, and because we both watched it. But the other one I watched was a film from Prime, actually. It's called My Best Friend's Exorcism. It's a comedy horror. It's actually a book that they made into a movie. It was really good. It was really funny. And there are some legitimately disturbing, like, scenes in it. Like, it's supposed to be kind of, like, comedic, but, like, there are some, like, legitimately, like, what the actual fuck did I just watch? So yeah, it's pretty good. I won't spoil it for anybody, but let's just say there's a scene with a tapeworm that you can look forward to. Anywho, back to Baghead. So I have mixed feelings about Baghead. I thought it was decent, but I don't know. I felt like there were just parts to the movie that just made it drag. Like it was good, but like I definitely felt like they could have trimmed a couple parts and it probably would have been just a little bit better.
Yeah, I was a little, it wasn't bad, but it's not what, I don't know, it's not what I expected for some reason. Right. And I don't know, it's like, I guess I expected more of a Baghead character. Yeah. And it, you know, and I get it, right? What they did tie it, you know, it was in the movie. It made sense. But because of the way they went, again, it wasn't bad. It just was not what I was thinking it was going to do. And it kind of was like, eh. This is not what I really wanted. I was hoping for, you know, this another iconic horror character to come up. But it was okay. It was all right. I would by no means discourage anyone from watching it. Because a lot of my trepidations, I think, were purely it was my fault. It was because I envisioned one thing, and apparently they went a different. I misunderstood, I guess. And it was nobody's fault. It was just me. But it was okay. Not a movie I'll probably ever revisit, but.
Same. But you're not alone in that. I had definitely different expectations for the film. And it just, like you said, it just didn't necessarily live up to him. But, you know what they say about expectations. Expectations are the killer of enjoyment, I guess they say. So, it is what it is.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I did not enjoy the movie. It was okay. Right. But it's just, I don't think in the end it was necessarily my type of horror, what I really wanted out of it. You know, I don't know. And, it is what it, I guess, I don't know. I guess just seeing the poster and everything, for whatever reason, I had a different vision in my head of what was happening here.
Right.
And, it is what it is. But, if anybody wants to check that out, it is on Shudder now. So, this has been a movie that's been, it's been weird because it was on the calendar for a while back, it seems like, because we had talked about reviewing it and then, I don't know what happened. It got shuffled around and I don't know. It's pretty peculiar. I guess I can see now seeing it why maybe, I don't know. Maybe there was a little trip, you know, a little discussion on what to do with it, when to release it. I don't think it was strong enough to do any kind of theatrical release with, but, no. So I don't know. It got shuffled around.
It's definitely no, It's a Wonderful Knife, which is another Shudder movie that was. Yeah, yeah. Exquisite.
Yeah, which by the way is coming out on physical media soon. I don't know the date, but it's soon for those who partake in that. So outside of Baghead, I did watch, Ike, on your recommendation, I watched The Babadook, which is available on Hulu and Netflix, and it was really good. It was disturbing. Anything, man, I just like anything to me that involves a kid who I feel for bothers me. It's a little unsettling, right? And this kid, you felt bad for him, right? Cause he was right. And man, he was really getting mistreated. And, thankfully, you know, he was resilient, bounced back and all this and that, but it was a pretty good movie. I enjoyed it. And the other movie I watched, and I'm not even sure how I came across. Oh, well, actually, I do know why, because there was a thing I saw somewhere on the internet that the third film is going to be coming out video on demand pretty soon. I don't remember what it's gonna be called, but I did watch. It's on Peacock. I watched The Jack in the Box, and apparently there's two different movies: The Jack in the Box, and there's a second one which I will be watching. And yeah, it was good. It was about obviously a Jack in the Box, and it gave a whole backstory where the origin of Jack in the Boxes were to capture evil spirits and demons, and not as a child's toy. And then they come across this old Jack in the Box, and they open it, and it unleashes a thing. And it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. And
I think it would check out.
Yeah, it was pretty fun, and I'm looking forward to seeing the second one. And like I said, the third one I believe is getting ready to come out video on demand. And I'm hoping the second's as strong as the first. And if so, I mean, I think they're I think they're carving out their own little thing here. It was pretty good. It was, you know, pretty, you know, I've not seen a Jack in the Box movie before, you know, and it's a clown, right? It's a, cause obviously typically in a Jack in the Box, it's a clown type character, but it was very creepy and whatever else, but it was, this is kind of a unique approach and I very much enjoyed it. So yeah, I would advise you to check it out. Like I said, it's on Peacock and I don't know what the second one's on. I haven't looked it up yet, but I intend I'll probably watch it before next episode. So, but I would I advise people to check it out. It was pretty good. So, all right. Well, if we're done with what we watched, then let's move on to our weekly segment.
Two Truths and an AI.
And this episode, we are going to do Two Truths and an AI. This is the segment where I have, and I have them right here in my hands right now, as produced by my wife, Monica, three movie descriptions. And of the three, two of them are real movies. One of them is a movie description generated by AI. I will read these to Ike. Ike will try to guess which one is AI, and we will see whether he is right or not. So, Ike, are you ready to play?
I am as ready as I ever will be.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's really no preparation you can do for this, so.
Negative.
Take a deep breath, clear your mind, and here we go. Description number one. A college student takes a strange babysitting job that coincides with a full lunar eclipse. She slowly realizes the parents have a terrifying secret about their ties to a cult, putting her life in mortal danger. Whew, so that is description number one.
Okay.
Description number two. A group of family and friends on a camping trip are taken on a one-way ride to hell after they inadvertently witness a ritual sacrifice at a deserted campsite. So that is description number two. And description number three. While on vacation, a family's coordinator reveals himself to be a leader of a very powerful cult. He had chosen the Smith family as their next sacrifice.
Okay. Interesting.
Indeed.
So my initial thoughts, I'm trying to remember Here for Blood, Back for Blood. Did that movie happen during an eclipse? It didn't, did it?
No, I don't think there was anything mentioned about an eclipse.
Because that first movie kind of sounds like Here for Blood.
Yeah, it's not though.
No. So, okay. So, I have a feeling, because knowing Monica, you know, how she generates these, I'm trying to think if because the third one is the one that first and foremost kind of threw up a red flag, because they specifically used the name Smith, and Smith is just a very common, like, last name. It's a very common, like, Caucasian person's, like, last name. It's like John Smith. So, like, I could see an AI, like, generating a sort of, like, scripting or, like, a summary using, like, a common last name like Smith. But at the same time, I guess I wouldn't put it past a horror movie to use a common name like that. So I'm like, should that be the red flag? Or should the second one be the red flag? Because the second one just, some of the wording seemed a little weird. I feel confident that the first one's real. Let me say that. I feel pretty confident the first one's real, so I'm between the other two. I think I want to say that the third one is AI generated. I think that's what I want to say.
Okay, final answer?
Let's go. Let's send it. Full send.
All right. So number one, a college student takes a strange babysitting job that coincides with a full lunar eclipse. She slowly realizes the parents have a terrifying secret about their ties to a cult, putting her life in mortal danger. This is the 2009 movie, The House of the Devil. And on a note, she said Greta Gerwig of Barbie movie fame co-stars in this movie.
Okay.
So, number two, a group of family and friends on a camping trip are taken on a one-way ride to hell after they inadvertently witness a ritual sacrifice at a deserted campsite. So you said, and by your guess, that this was a real movie. This is the 2010 movie Hard Ride to Hell. And on a note, she said Catherine Isabel from Supernatural and Ginger Snaps co-stars in this movie. Ooh, that means I have to watch it. So And number three, while on vacation, a vacation coordinator reveals himself to be the leader of a very powerful cult. He had chosen the Smith family as their next sacrifice. This is AI generated using the phrase family encounters cult on vacation.
There you go.
So there you have it. You nailed it.
As I, my thought process did not fail me today.
Yes, and to be fair, I had not heard of either of these movies. So, but I'm going to have to give at least Hard Ride to Hell a watch because I do enjoy Catherine Isabel very, very much. Oh, she was also in Freddy vs. Jason. So,
yeah, absolutely. I have not seen it, but I have heard of House of the Devil. I know the cover of the movie just because it's like a very notable cover, I think.
Yeah. And what was Catherine Isabel was in something recently that we watched, remember? She was in, she played like an aunt in it.
I think it was It's a Wonderful Knife.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, It's a Wonderful Knife. Speaking of, we just talked about that earlier. That's right. She was in that as well.
She was.
Well, very, very good. All right. Congratulations, Ike. You got that one right again.
Woo.
You have once again saved us from Skynet and kept, the AI at check. Well done. You are truly the Terminator.
the Screaminator.
It is not a tumor. All right. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will have news, birthdays, and movie anniversaries. So stick around.
Make sure you subscribe to listen to their screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two in Screams, and you can find us there. Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spread the news. And welcome back to the news. All right. Got some good stuff today. We're going to start off with the first trailer for Maxine was released on April the 8th. It has also been announced that the movie will be rated R for strong violence, gore, sexual content, and graphic nudity. For those of us who have seen Pearl and X, these reasons for rating are probably not going to be surprising at all.
Yep.
Dave actually sent me the trailer for this, and it looks good. For those who haven't watched it. The proposed story here is our friend Maxine is going to be in Hollywood at the same time the Night Stalker is. So that should be interesting.
I like everything about this movie.
Yes.
As we have mentioned before, I love X. It's not as big on Pearl. I did not feel it was a stronger movie. I mean, it's a decent movie. Just didn't feel it was up to X level. Right. This one looks like it has the potential to be even better than X in my book. It is set in the 80s. It is just all over the place, and plus it has a little Kevin Bacon in it, which is always a good thing. I'm psyched for this. This is going to be fun. And when all said and done, man, if this movie's as good as it looks, still, even my thoughts to Pearl aside, this is going to be a pretty strong trilogy.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Absolutely. And who knows, there may even be a fourth movie to make it quadrilogy.
Yeah, we talked about that a few weeks ago, that he has an ideal. Never know.
Never know. If the money's right, show me the money.
Sure it will be.
I'm sure it will be. All right. Lionsgate has unfortunately pushed the release of Saw 11 back to September 26, 2025, as the project is still in development. This actually is, I mean, obviously we don't like to see movies get pushed back, but I would rather them push it back and do it right than them rush the production and get it out sooner. That's always going to be my stance.
Yeah, and I don't think this is any surprise. This is one of those movies, again, when we saw that first date of around Halloween, we thought, how are they going to pull that off? And, you know, I think it's just ambitious. Just put it on a date, get it on a calendar. And, you know, I don't think this is surprising, really. It's like we talked about with the Wolfman, I think, last episode. It had a Halloween date. They pushed it back to. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah, you're hopeful because that sounds great. But in the back of your head, you're like, how are they going to pull that off? And I don't know, September, fall 2025 sounds a little more comfortable with the timeline for this movie for me. So It's all good.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Now we have Chucky Season 3 Part 2 is returning to USA and Sci-Fi on April 10th. That means today that we're filming this.
As we're recording, say. Yeah.
Recording. Not release. I should
On the day of release, it's out there. So as on the day of release, it is available on Peacock. So you Correct. Everybody that has Peacock can watch it if they haven't already. I will be watching it on Peacock that on the day after because I have Peacock. I'm super excited. I do love me some Chucky.
Absolutely. And fun little tidbit. Recently, Jennifer Tilly teased the return of the Tiffany doll to the franchise. So,
That's right.
For people who've watched this, I think it makes perfect sense where they're going with that. So we'll see what happens. Yeah.
I mean, they have pretty much used virtually every element of this franchise already. And like Jennifer Tilly said when she teased this, people like the doll. People love the doll. Why not? Why would they not bring it back? And everybody just stand by because things gonna happen. I'm curious to see what they do because, you know, spoilers for anybody that hasn't watched it. But we kind of have this cliffhanger of, hey, Chucky the doll is actually aging. And what's happening with that? So I'm curious to see where they go with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very curious to see where they go with it. So
you picked the right time to catch up on that series.
I did. I literally did. We just finished it, what, like 2-3 weeks ago, I think. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'll probably try and watch it weekly just because, I mean, I don't typically watch it weekly. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't typically do weekly shows just because I don't like it. Like, I've grown up in the binge watching generation where I just watch it all at once. So,
yeah, but we got to talk about it.
That's true. So I probably have to watch it, you know, and just be sad that I can't watch the rest of it. That's how it goes.
it just builds your anticipation for next week.
That's true. They're doing the same thing with that show I watched, Evil. They're putting the final season out one episode at a time. And then I'm pretty sure they're also doing the same with the Fallout show that actually came out as of release. The first episode did on Prime, or maybe the first two episodes. So, Fallout isn't explicitly horror, but there are some pretty horrifying things about Fallout.
Yeah.
People have played the games.
Yeah. I mean, there's pluses and minuses to this route, right? I mean, it's
right.
Yes, there are positives to binging something and watch it all the way through, but there is, you know, there's something to be said for that weekly anticipation and having something every week to watch and looking forward to it. And on their side, right? It's obvious it prolongs that hype and what they can build and, that, you know, being in the public eye and, you know, so there's a lot of positives on both ends, but, you know, a show that is as good as Chucky, if you're just patient, man, it pays off to watch every week.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's on Peacock, which is not a absolute piece of shit of a streaming service. So Dude, I'm looking at you, Prime.
I do like the cock.
All right. Somebody's gonna clip that.
I don't care.
I hope that they use it repeatedly.
Go right ahead.
All right. So I'm gonna give a little pause for those who want to clip that real quick. But no, I'm kidding. All right. We have two other last minute entries to our news segment today. Both of these are very good. Blumhouse and Lionsgate joined forces for a brand new The Blair Witch Project movie. So Blumhouse has been working with Lionsgate to go through their collection, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. of films to remake them and revitalize them. And I think that the choice to do The Blair Witch Project is actually a good choice. So the last Blair Witch Project was made in 2016. It was called, I think it was just called The Blair Witch. And it was good. I quite enjoyed it. But, you know, we're coming up on 10 years. So by the time this movie comes out, it'll probably be 10 years since the last Blair Witch movie, which is fucking insane that 2016 was that long ago. But so, yeah, I think it's probably time to bring some more out, especially since the previous content to the 2016 version was the 90s, so there was a good little gap there between all the movies. So, you know, I'm all for it. Blumhouse can do whatever they want, honestly, and it's going to be good. Everything they do, everything they touch is gold, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. I, you know, hopefully they do it right, and you know, it's a nice concept. I don't know. Who knows what the premise is going to be? Is it going to be a kind of a requel reboot type thing? Is it going to be a continuation? Who knows? It's, they'll get in there and examine it. I don't think it's going to be a direct remake. I don't see how that's going to work in this, a movie like this. So, but, honestly, I don't know.
Honestly, Blumhouse has the money. I feel confident that they could do one of two things. They could confidently do sort of like a requel where it goes back to the original film. And like, I honestly, if I were in Blumhouse, I would pull sort of like a Descent type pull where you have one of the people who went missing come back. So like the woman. Yeah. I mean, and they have the money, and the woman, I believe, still does act occasionally. So you throw enough money at her, she'll probably do it. So you bring her back, and like you can develop a story where like she just randomly appears after 20 years, and she decides to go back with like a film crew or something like that. And I feel like you could make it really good. You know what I mean? I feel like there's a lot of promise there. So that's my opinion. I feel like that's a really good way to do like a requel. That way you can directly tie it to the original film a little differently than they did with the 2016 reboot that they did.
I'm curious to see what they do. It's a, it's exciting.
It is. So. All right. And then one other piece of exciting news, which I'm pretty sure Dave called this, but we'll talk about that in just a second. We have some Scream 7 news. Scream 7 will reportedly include Sidney Prescott's family as leads. They're looking to cast Sid's two kids, and it seems like the movie will focus on Sid's family as all four, her husband, and two kids, are listed as leads. Dave has mentioned many a time that they need to get Patrick Dempsey back to play her husband, and I guarantee it that that's going to happen. Patrick Dempsey is fantastic. He did great in Thanksgiving, so I think he's ready for some more blood. And this to me means that all roads lead to Stu, you know?
I hope so.
That's my opinion.
Again, how else do you do it? Right? How else do you bypass what has happened in the last two movies? Not bypass, but, you know, not directly linked to the last two movies with them being gone. I mean, you have to go, you know, you got Sidney on board. You have to go back, and it's got to involve her entire family, right? It has to. It's just the only logical way to pull this off. And, so here's hoping, right? I don't have any doubt that I don't think Patrick Dempsey will jump on board. I hope they'll make him, you know, probably make him an offer, and he'll be able to cast, you know, someone as the children. And, you know, we support, you know, reportedly Courtney Cox is, you know, hopefully on board. And, I think we're set. And then, if they bring back Stu, from the fires of the dog shit that this was looking like it was all going to be coming out of all that mess. If they pull all this stuff off, this could wind up being one of my favorites of the franchise.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt about it. But we shall see. Only time will tell. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's all of our news for this week. I'm going to go ahead and pitch it right here. If you want to stay up to date on the news and get reminded of different things, make sure you follow us on social media. Do it. Do it now. We'll wait. You can go do that. We'll wait. We have all the time in the world.
Total peer pressure.
Total peer pressure. Do the drugs.
All the cool kids are doing it.
That's right. All the cool kids smoke crack. I'm telling you. Anyways.
Yikes.
I'm just kidding. Don't do drugs. Don't do drugs.
Unless just follow us on social media. I don't think Nancy Reagan would have had a problem with that.
I don't know. She's a, like a boomer, so she probably doesn't understand it. I mean, she's dead, but you know, if she were alive.
Yeah. Anyway. Just remember what Wendy Hughes said. Another person who's dead, by the way. She said, "Crack is whack."
That is. Yeah, she did say that, didn't she?
She said it, but
did she?
Anyway.
All right. Upcoming birthdays, April 12th, 1971, Nicholas Brendon, who plays Xander in Buffy. I'm actually not totally sure who this guy is, but I know I've seen Buffy, so I'm sure I've seen him before.
Yeah, he's the main dude. He was in there from the very beginning through the entire series. There was, you know, I mean, Buffy, Willow, and Xander were the primary three.
This is the guy that's, he's also in Criminal Minds, right? He plays the IT guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That dated, Garcia, or is that her name? Garcia?
Yeah.
Yeah. That dated Kevin. I think his name's Kevin. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. Kevin Lynch.
Yeah. He was in, yeah. That's him.
Very cool. Well, yeah, then I do know who he is. Awesome. Very cool. Well, happy birthday, Nicholas. All right. April 14th, 1977, Sarah Michelle Gellar. Sorry, I don't know why I saw it like that. Sarah Michelle Gellar. Who plays Buffy in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Scream 2, I Know What You Did Last Summer. The Grudges 1 and 2. And even more importantly, Scooby-Doo 1 and 2. I love the Scooby-Doo movies. I cannot explain to you how much I love those movies.
It's a pretty good cast.
It is. It is. I mean, it's got our boy in it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's got our boy. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, guys, then you just don't know. You just simply don't know. I'm kidding. It's Matthew Lillard.
We were just talking about him.
We were.
Yeah, I mean, and as much as I love him with Stu, I mean, the dude was born to play Shaggy.
He really was. He really, really was. And like, I've seen him at, like, conventions and stuff where he, like, meets kids and he does the Shaggy voice because they're, like, scared. And it is literally the most heartwarming thing that I've ever seen in my life. But, all right. Anywho, other than my love for Matthew Lillard, happy birthday, Sarah. And then last, we have April 17th, 1954. The one, the only, the Roddy Piper from Wrestler and They Live. Obviously, Roddy Piper is mostly known for his wrestling career, but he was in a very unique horror film called They Live. It's very good. I have seen it.
Yeah, great movie.
Absolutely.
Love some Roddy Piper. Yeah, it'd be all right. But yeah, I love me some Roddy Piper. He did several movies, but obviously They Live is what stands out and is probably the best.
Right, in his repertoire.
Yeah, he did a lot of things, though.
Amen to that. All right. And also, rest in peace. He did die in 2015, so dearly departed. All right. Upcoming movie anniversaries. We've got a few. April 11th, 1986, Critters. I think I have actually seen Critters. I want to say that I have. I'm trying to remember. Is this one that's, it's like, kind of like, they're not the same, but they kind of look like the Ghoulies a little bit.
Yeah, they're
like similar. Porcupine looking things.
Yeah. The first critters, there's been several Critters movies, but the first one's not too bad. But then the sequels are like, the first one's okay.
I'll have to check it out sometime. I'm pretty sure I've seen it many moons ago. It has a D. Wallace in it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
There you go. And then April 11th, 2003, House of 1,000 Corpses. You know, we have our love-hate relationship with Rob Zombie, mostly hate, but, you know, I respect Rob Zombie. I love House of 1,000 Corpses. This one is legitimately good, in my opinion.
Yep.
I could not get into The Devil's Rejects personally, but I respect him for this movie alone, so, you know,
yeah.
Good for that.
I do like this movie, yeah, and Captain Spaulding is an iconic character.
He is, very much so. Captain Spaulding. All right. April 13th, 1984. It is Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Of course, you know, we talk a lot about Friday the 13th, and hopefully soon we'll have some more information on Crystal Lake, the TV show. And we'll be able to talk a little bit more about Friday the 13th because we love it. To me, Friday the 13th, the final chapter, is this is my Friday the 13th movie. This is the one that I think of when I think of Jason, just because I always remember Corey Feldman's character in the movie and his interaction, Tommy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is my favorite Friday the 13th film, I think, of all, other than the ones I think that are super campy.
Yeah, not my favorite, but it is a good movie. It is definitely up there in the top half of the franchise for me. So
yeah, there's a word for it. We've used it before, but I can't remember the word now because my brain's having a complete fart. But yeah,
I don't know either.
It'll come to me later. I'll be sitting in my living room eating dinner and be like,
oh, is it like your prototypical Jason or something like that? Or
yeah, something like that. Like this is like what I think of when I think of Jason. This is it.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before though. Same thing with like Nightmare and, you know, Halloween and things of that nature. But, all right. Moving on up, we have April 13th, 2012, The Cabin in the Woods. This is a fantastic movie. There's also a book, I guess, about this movie. I didn't know that. But yeah, I love The Cabin in the Woods. I love Chris Hemsworth in it. I think he's hilarious, as well as everybody else in the movie. But
yeah, it's pretty good movie. Definitely better than Cabin Fever.
There's a lot of cabin movies. Dave has this very distinct hate for the Cabin Fever movie.
Do not like Cabin Fever, but no, this one's all right.
Good stuff. All right. April 14th, 2023, The Pope's Exorcist. We just reviewed this, or we didn't just review this. It was like a year ago, probably, but which is crazy to think about. But yeah, we watched this and reviewed it. I think it had generally positive reviews. It was definitely not your typical possession-esque movie, but it did have kind of a weird like Avengers Assemble moment at the end, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that was kind of our, we thought it was a pretty good movie, but yeah, that ending was like, oh, what are they kind of trying to do, a Marvel's universe kind of thing? It was kind of a little peculiar at the end, but maybe not what I would have done, but whatever, more power to them.
That's right. And then on the same day, the same year, April 14, 2023, we have Renfield, which we, of course, also reviewed. Obviously, we both love Renfield. Renfield is a fantastic telling of a tale of Dracula. Nicholas Holt, or is it Nicholas Holt? Is that the right name?
Cage? Oh, you're talking about the Renfield.
Yeah,
the
Renfield is that Nicholas Holt, though?
Yeah, I believe so.
I always question myself on that one. It's either that one or it's the other guy. I always get them confused.
It's Nicholas Holt.
I always get him confused with a guy that plays, Adam in, or what is his name? Adam in the Guardians of Galaxy 3.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember the guy's name or the character's name for some reason. Anyways.
Yeah, I was having trouble even picturing what the actual Renfield character looked like. I was like, I can't even picture him because all I can picture is Nicolas Cage. And
true, Nicolas Cage was a good Dracula.
He was
very good. But yeah, we reviewed that movie.
Obviously, fully into it, fully enjoyed it.
Oh, obviously. But you know, both those movies we reviewed. So if you guys want to go check those out in the archives for sure. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, April 15th, 2011, Scream 4. Scream 4 was not my favorite Scream movie, but it was a very good entry into this franchise. And it did a good job of, you know, kind of bringing Scream into the 21st century, in my opinion. Even though the third movie was released in the 21st century, it didn't feel like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not one of my favorites, but it did introduce Kirby, which I really like that character. And I'm glad they brought her back in the last one. But overall, it was, I don't know, not the greatest. I mean, wasn't the worst. I mean, I don't know. Was it the worst? Maybe. I don't know. No. We're not going to get into all this, but I don't think it's my worst. But I don't know. It would definitely, I think, be in my lower ranking. I can't remember. We did a Scream ranking, I think, when the last one came out, and I don't remember where we had this. So, again, people can go in the archives and look at our – we did a Scream ranking before Scream, what was it, 6 came out?
And, I think it was 7?
I think 7's the next one.
Is 7 the next one? I always get confused how many fucking Scream movies there are.
Yeah, well, Scream 5 was just called Scream.
Okay, yeah, it was.
Scream 6 was the last one that came out, whatever, last year or whenever it was. And then Scream 7 is the next one. So,
okay, yeah.
But right before the newest one, right before we reviewed it, we did a Scream franchise episode, so people can look at our rankings there. And I would venture to guess we didn't have this ranked, because at that time it would have been out of 5 movies. Whew. I gotta think it might have been at the very bottom, actually. I wonder here's the because it's definitely not bumping out what surely it would, but didn't bump out 1 and 2 for us.
No, I'm almost positive that it was probably,
I got a feeling it was 1, 2, 5, 3, 4.
I think so.
But I don't know. But anyway, I don't know.
Anywho, we'll come back to that at some point, I'm sure. I mean, there's going to be another movie, so we'll have to do another ranking. Sounds like we
were super, super prepared for that.
Right.
We're just sitting here like, I don't know what we said. We did it, but I don't remember.
I was there, but I don't remember. That was a year ago.
We have done a lot of recording since then.
We have. But anywho, that's all of our anniversaries, guys. We made it through it. And we only have one upcoming release. Sting hits theaters on April 12th. And we're not talking about the musician or the wrestler. We're talking about describing as, after raising an unnervingly talented spider in secret, 12-year-old Charlotte must face the facts about her pet and fight for her family's survival. When the once charming creature rapidly transforms into a giant flesh-eating monster. We will be reviewing this next episode. Mm-hmm. But I'm very excited for this one, actually. I feel like it's going to be sort of like a retelling of, like, Charlotte's Web, which is why I think they're called the person Charlotte, or at least a nod to Charlotte's Web. So, like, I'm, like, halfway curious if this is, like a movie that falls into, like, the whole public domain thing, but I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a pretty old movie, so, or a book and whatnot, so one would think, yeah, maybe it does fall in, but again, I mean, it's a spider movie with a girl named Charlotte, so, you know, it's obviously an homage in some capacity. So,
true story. All right. That does it for all of our news, upcoming birthdays and anniversaries and releases. If you guys want to keep up with us, like I said earlier, follow us on social media. That's all there is to it. Coming up next is our official review of The First Omen. Stick around.
Listen to Their Screams is now a Fangoria collaborator. Get 20% off your order at shop.fangoria.com by using the promo code LISTEN2SCREAMS at checkout. That is LISTEN, the number 2, and SCREAMS. Or you can click the link in the show notes.
All right, and we're back here on Listen to Their Screams. It is review time. And like I said, we are reviewing The First Omen, which was released April 5th in theaters, written by Ben Jacoby. Directed by Arkasha Stevenson, starring Nell Tiger-Free, Ralph Ineson, and Sonia Braga. It grossed $8,353,710 on opening weekend domestically, which was good for number 4. And that's not bad because there were still some pretty powerhouse movies out there. We have a Ghostbusters movie out there. We have a Godzilla Kong movie. So number 4 is not too shabby. And man, I'm just going to say a brief bit, then I'll kick to you, because I always talk first. All I can say is, if this were a video podcast right now, I would be probably giving this movie a standing ovation, because this movie was amazing. I loved this movie. I thought this movie did a prequel right. I think it had all the vibe, the energy, the feel of The First Omen. I thought it led into it very well. I thought it was clever. It was well acted. It was well shot. The pacing, the timing, I just thought everything worked and gave it the right vibe and feel. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie, even if you can kind of have an idea of where it's going based on, you know, what it leads into. So you can piece things together, right? And get an idea. But still, they did it well. And this movie, man, I love it. I so enjoyed it. I think as we stand right now, this is probably my favorite horror movie of the year so far. And that may not stand. Obviously, we know there's particularly one movie that we're a little biased to that we really love that's coming up in the fall. But as of now, I just thought this movie was great. I could talk more about it, but Ike, let me get your initial reactions.
Yeah. Let me preface it by saying that I did like the movie. It was good. But I liked Immaculate better. They're very similar movies. Mm-hmm. And obviously it was definitely not intentional, because obviously Immaculate, it came out first, but at the same time, The Omen, it was, so I guess to clarify, they're similar in the fact that they're both movies about a church forcing a woman to get pregnant, and the baby being sort of like not meant to be born. There's something wrong with it, whether it's a demon or something else. Yeah. So obviously for people who have watched The Omen, you definitely know how this is ending. They did a very good job of getting from point A to B in this movie. I think that for a movie that's supposed to be set in the 70s, you know, it didn't seem like they were trying too hard. Cause a lot of times when you do like period movies where it's from like a certain decade, they sometimes like, I don't know, it gets to the point where it's either like stupid and campy, and it's full of stereotypes, I should say, of that period, or they do it right. And I really felt like they did a good job with this. I felt like they really did a good job of depicting the party scene of the 70s, especially in this area. And it was very unique. And the twist that it has, because obviously I don't want to completely spoil it, the twist that they do kind of come to, which I didn't really see coming, was really great, honestly. I caught it like right before they reviewed it, but or released it, I guess, in the movie. But like, it definitely caught me a little off guard. Now, my wife, she kind of called it early on in the movie. She's like, oh, I bet this is what this is. But I definitely didn't see it coming as soon as she did. And not to mention, the movie just, in my opinion, looked really good. Like the cinematography, the editing, everything else made it seem very cohesive. And a lot of times we also, you know, on the show, we talk about the length of the movie. This was a long ass movie. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get the exact runtime, but I want to say it was almost 2 hours.
It was like, I think 119 minutes. It was like right at 2 hours.
Yeah. When I look at the technical specs on IMDb, it says 120 minutes, 2 hours.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, and Dave and I both typically agree that if you're going to have a long movie, it needs to be really good, because typically we're looking for 90 minutes or less with a horror movie. But this movie, in my opinion, the 2 hours was perfect. You know, this, I guess when you have it's weird because sometimes when you have these films, normally they're working on a sequel, right? So you have the first movie and so you're working off of that one. But this movie's unique because it was a prequel to a movie made in the 70s. So you have, you know, 50-year-old source material that you are working backwards on. So you have to make sure that everything kind of comes together super neatly, you know, especially with things like, you know, the canonicity of the story and everything else. So they did tie everything up in a nice little bow. But I would be interested to see if they're going to make more movies, because at the end of this movie, they kind of allude to there potentially being more to talk about. So, but yeah, I liked it. I thought it was very good. Everything about it from a technical perspective was good. Good soundtrack. The music and the sounds that they used were just, oh man, jarring to say the least. And, yeah. Absolutely. It was a very enjoyable movie. Like I said, I think I did like Immaculate just a little bit better, but that's not to say that this was not a bad movie. This was a very, very good movie.
Yeah. I mean, again, like you said, this a period piece that didn't feel hokey, right? They didn't feel like they tried to overdo it. They let it be natural.
Right.
And it didn't try to make it so cliche, and it worked, right? Because, you know, people envision time periods in their head and they see cliches, and that's not all true. You know, it is what it is, but they did a very good job. And again, maybe because I do love The Omen so much, that's why I like this, because I think it really led into it really, really great. And, I think they did, you know, they did leave the door open for something else to happen, right? With the ending, with, and what was going on with it, right? You knew where it was going to a point, but there were some things in there that kind of leave a door cracked to do something kind of a side story, perhaps. But it was, you know, I thought it was great. It was highly enjoyable. I thought it was entirely how they should, if they're going to take an old movie, an old franchise, do something like this, whether it be a prequel or whatever it may be, this is how you do it. This is because it had the right vibe, the right feel, the right sound, just everything that really makes it fit with the Omen, right? It doesn't feel jarring or out of place, right? They did it right. And again, like you said, 2 hours, I know a lot of times I bitch about 2 hour movie, 2 hour plus movies in horror. I think sometimes it's like, you don't need that, right? Get in and out in 90 minutes and you're good for the most part. But man, this one, it didn't feel like 2 hours to me. It just, it moved along. I think they developed the story. There was just a lot. There was a lot of different aspects going on that kind of you didn't think a whole lot about as they were happening per se, because you were really focused just on that primary character, Margaret. And so some of this peripheral stuff you just thought was just about her. And then right. At the end, they kind of brought a lot of that together of, oh, well, there was a bigger picture here that was happening. And while you were focused so much on Margaret, you know, again, spoiler, you kind of find out in the grand scheme, Margaret was just a pawn, and it wasn't, there was more happening than what you anticipated. And I like that, right? I like when you're watching and you're thinking things are happening just to develop the Margaret character and the main character, right? And where that's leading. And while it is doing that, though, it is also developing the bigger picture too. And I think this did it really well without being, you know, blatantly obvious. And again, I also thought what was her name? Karita, the one girl that they tried to, I just thought, nah, I don't think she's what you think, because it just seemed too obvious going through it. And I wondered because of some of the parallels they were drawing, and, it came to be. Again, I don't want to directly say a whole lot, because people really need to go see this movie. I would highly advise people to watch The Omen first and then go see it, because I haven't seen The Omen in a while, and I rewatched it before, and it is nice to have that kind of fresh in your mind, when you go in and to have some of that movie there right on the cusp of your memory. But it was fun, man. And I'm very trepidatious about these, whatever you want to call them, religious possession, demon, devil movies, because it does seem like we've talked about this in the past many, many times. Sometimes there gets to be so many of them that they start to blur, and it's like they start feeling a lot alike, and it takes something kind of fresh, right, to bring it out, right? Immaculate was a little bit of a different approach. A little different take. That was kind of different. While The Pope's Exorcist really wasn't anything, you know, that different per se, it had that weird Avengers type superhero ending, which kind of made it fun. But so when you watch a lot of these, it's like if you watch a bunch of them, they kind of blur a little bit, right? What's what? Who are we talking about here? Which Antichrist and which demon and which whatever? And, but I think, I don't know, maybe for me, just because the Omen was there as kind of, you know, way back before there got to be so many of them. And this was setting, you know, leading into that it made it feel different to me, because I knew of, you know, what it was doing and where it was going. And, I guess I, you know, maybe that added a whole layer of enjoyment for me, but I really liked it. And what's her name? Nell Tiger Free. She was phenomenal. And she was great. That part where she was, what, I don't even know what you want to call it, where she was essentially the child, the demon, the Antichrist was coming within her when she got out of that car. Dude, I mean, there was a lot, you know, there was a lot of her physicality and acting that was really well done on that. And, man, she was great. And the whole cast was good. It was everybody fit. Everybody felt right. And
I was gonna add to that the scene where, because you know, I guess the scene that was like where she was kind of like convulsing and stuff.
Yeah.
And I made the parallel that, you know, there are certain scenes in movies that are like, they're not bloody, they're not gory, they're not like overtly like plainly disturbing, But there is like another level to like filmmaking and like making disturbing movies where you make a person afraid or disturbed by making them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that scene, similar to the Sydney Sweeney birthing scene from Immaculate,
yeah,
they do a very good job of maintaining like that connection and making you uncomfortable, like genuinely. And it's because of like just both of these actresses, they're so great. You know, I mean, Sydney Sweeney in this, Nell Tiger-Free in The First Omen. So you have like this very interesting dynamic where they're kind of taking it to the next level of, this is not going to be overtly gory or like violent. This is just going to be flat out weird and disturbing. And that's a different kind of fear, you know, and I like that a lot.
Yeah. And I think there was a few times in this movie where it was a little unsettling, right? There was obviously that scene. There was a birthing scene in this that was a little unsettling too. There was at least one scene where it was like in the shadows, right? She's looking into the shadows and you know, there must be something there that she's seen something there. And it's like sitting in a theater. You're almost leaning forward, trying to look deeper into that shadows to see what she's seen. And then it comes, you know, there were a few, you see, there was, you know, there was a death of the one guy involving the car where he's, you know, cut in half. That was a little unsettling. Yeah. The one suicide, scene of the one nun, where she, you know, essentially, you know, she sets herself on fire and jumps off and hangs herself. That was a little unsettling. There were definitely a few scenes in this where it's kind of make, you know, it's not that it was so graphic or gory or anything to that effect, but it was just, it was a little unnerving and unsettling. And that's good. That's like you said, that's a different kind of fear, a different kind of tension that it's building. And that's what we've talked about recently, right? Modern movies are missing some of that, right? Yeah. Some of that, let's build that. And it doesn't have to be gore. It doesn't have to be the violence per se, just in some way, build the uneasiness, build the tension and build that fear so that when, you know, it comes to a point where there's a release of that and it makes you invested in the movie and the character. And, I think this movie did it well. And I was very pleased. I really, really enjoyed this movie a lot. Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's rank this sucker. So, I'm going to go first and, I'm just right out of the gates. I'm just going to say it. We typically, Ike, you're the little more overambitious of the two. This might be, maybe it's a little flip flop today, but, I am giving this movie a 4 out of 5 screams for me because I absolutely love this movie. And like I said, I think so far, this is my favorite movie of the year. So The First Omen is getting a 4 out of 5 screams from me. So Ike, what are you giving it?
Yeah, I'm not giving it a 4. I am giving it a 3.5 out of 5. I definitely enjoyed this movie. Then this honestly might be because I loved Immaculate so much, and watching this off the tail of Immaculate, and it could be that. So I definitely tried to think about that, but this movie to me did not necessarily seem on the same level in some aspects. It was very good. A very worthy prequel to the original Omen, and I highly recommend everyone goes watches it. It is truly some disturbing stuff, but yeah, 3.5 out of 5 for me.
So let me ask you: so say Immaculate doesn't exist, it didn't happen, would it have in your eyes? Then would that have bumped this up higher? Do you think?
It's possible. I think that, and I guess to elaborate kind of on my thought process. You watch Immaculate and you saw what Immaculate did, for me at least. I saw what Immaculate did. I saw what Immaculate did with its concept and everything else. I thought it was unique and different. But I felt like what The First Omen did was somewhat similar. So I think had I not watched Immaculate, this potentially could have been higher just because maybe, and it wasn't even necessarily based on enjoyment. It just seemed repetitious or repetitious. Is that the word?
Yeah. Repetitive.
Repetitive. I don't know what the hell I'm going. Repetitious. Repetitious. repetitious, repetitive. I don't know the English language, apparently, so I don't know how much you want to listen to my ranking of this movie, but...
you put a little spice in it there. It's a little repetitious, baby.
I'm just out here making shit up at this point, but...
Well, that's all right. It's our podcast. Right. We can do what we want.
Hell yeah. But, hell yeah, brother. But, but yeah, I think that Immaculate, if it had not existed, this movie would have potentially been higher. Potentially.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I will honestly say that I think had this been a more standalone movie and not a prequel to The Omen, not tied to The Omen, it probably would have brought it down a little bit for me.
You think so? I think I would agree with that.
I very much enjoyed the movie and whatever else, but without knowing how it led into The Omen and how well it did it and how it captured that feel for me and spirit of The Omen very well, I think that added to the movie for me. And I think that's important. And I don't know that this movie would have worked as as just a standalone film, and not a prequel to The Omen, right? I mean, you know, had the movie ended and you say, oh, here, look, it's the Antichrist. Okay. I'm like, eh, I don't know that would have worked. If you didn't know, then boom, it goes into Omen. What happens in the, where it goes and what that means. So, but that's the goal when you do a prequel, right? You want that. You want your movie to add to that franchise or that movie or whatever it is in a positive way and add a layer and make the franchise as a whole and make the original movie more impactful. And I think this movie delivered on that, in that vein. So.
No, absolutely. And just to reemphasize what you said, had this not been a prequel without the existing content, I definitely think it would have suffered because I feel like the movie just, it was a perfect, and I truly mean this, very rarely do you get a perfect sequel or prequel. This was a perfect prequel. I genuinely cannot imagine what they could have done better, minus not come out at the same time as Immaculate. and that's not really their fault. That's just when it happened. That's just a circumstance, but I guess it's part of life. But absolutely, this movie, perfect prequel. I gotta throw that out there just to add a little more zest to it, Perfect prequel.
Yep, I agree. All right. Well, if you've not seen it yet, go watch the first Omen. If you have seen it, well, go watch it again because I think it warrants it. I'm looking forward to it coming out on streaming or video on demand or something and getting to watch it again. Actually, I would like to sit down, streaming or video on demand. And actually, I'd love to watch the first Omen and The Omen back to back, one right after another and just actually see them flow one into the other and see how it works. I think that'll be fun. So I look forward to doing that. So like we mentioned earlier, next episode, we are reviewing the movie Staying, coming to theaters April 12th, which is essentially a wild ass Charlotte's Web. Whether it's intended to be or not, we're describing it that way. And, I mean, it's got spiders. It's got a girl named Charlotte. I don't think we're taking that big a step. So I look forward to seeing it. Sounds fun to me. So Ike, before we close out, get out of here. Anything you want to add?
Just keep in mind, that if you're out there in the world, watch out for cars. Our boy in the first Omen did not watch out for that car. And, let's just say, he's gonna regret that. And,
Shit got him,
man. It got a little dicey. Let's just say that.
Yep. And, just as a public service, you might check your children for a 666 birth. Mark.
True.
And if you have it, I don't know. Consult a doctor. I don't think I can in comfort say consult a Catholic church because, I don't know. I'm just not comfortable consulting anybody to a Catholic church. And especially even after the first time when the Catholic church didn't come off looking real well. They came off kind of a little evil. But, I guess trying to do a little bad for a whole lot of good, I guess. I don't know their motives there, but go watch the movie and have a little fun. I wonder how many people either have or will get the a tattoo of that 666 in that layout, like from The Omen and the first Omen.
I actually thought that. I was like, I feel like that's going to be like a tattoo. Like, I'm sure somebody already has it from like The Omen.
I'm sure.
But I hope nobody does it because like I'm afraid of like how it would hurt. But like imagine somebody getting one like in the roof of their mouth.
Oh, yeah, no, yike. Yeah, it's right. Like tattoos on the inside of their lip. And I'm like, how do you do that?
No way.
I'm like, I am not anti-tattoo in any way, shape, or form, whatever else. But that's a sensitive area. Come on. But I would be curious if anybody has a tattoo of a, you know, I'm sure people do have, you know, a tattoo of Damien or anything else from the original. You would think there's got to be plenty of people out there. So I don't know. If you're listening to this and you have an Omen-related tattoo, then tag us on social media and show us, because oh hell, if you got any kind of horror tattoo, I'm always curious down to see some horror artwork like that. So I'm curious to see. I always like seeing people's creative tattoos. So yeah, show them off, tag us. We'll take a look.
True. Oh, as long as it's not in the roof of your mouth.
That's right. Ooh, yeah. That is sensitive. All right. So until next episode, when we're reviewing the movie Sting, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always have many pleasant nightmares.